You're listening to Potty Mouth Radio, the home of movies, music, television, and comedy.
And now, the hunt for the perfect album.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Hunt for the Perfect Album with Billy and Dave for a very, very special episode. We're having a little fireside chat with someone who I'm a massive, massive fan of. It's Mark Manone, co-founder of the Lost and Lonesome record label and, you know, stalwart of so many amazing Australian indie bands, including the Lucksmiths and Manone Alone. How you doing, Mark? Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. Sort of, cranking the brain up for the year, trying to get it unsoftified, trying to calcify it a bit more than it is.
It's so good to chat to you, man. I just want to know, obviously, like, indie is probably your favorite style of music, I'm guessing. It's what you play, it's what you seem to promote and stuff with Lost and Lonesome. What other style of music are you into? Are you quite eclectic in what you listen to?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't say I strictly listen to indie or indie rock or anything, but I guess that's the sort of realm I've fallen into by playing in certain styles of bands that are exactly that. But I'm an old geezer, so I do love old music too. But yeah, I mean, I love calypso music, for instance.
Yeah, right.
And old reggae, soul stuff as well. I mean, I wouldn't say I've got deep knowledge in any of those areas, but yeah. I definitely love it when I'm listening to that sort of music.
Yeah.
Love a bit of Belafonte.
Yeah,
I went on a big splurge, obviously, when he sadly passed. And up a lot of four or five different live albums of Belafonte doing various things. Oh, yeah. Love a bit of Calypso.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he had a very broad career, not just Calypso, obviously, but he's definitely one of the all-time greats.
Yeah.
Yep.
So speaking of the all-time greats, you, Mark, when did you start playing music? And did you start with the bass or did you start with other instruments? Or
I started with, if we sidestep a disastrous attempt at learning the trumpet in year 7, I think I was the guy. I love being in the orchestra because you can just pretend and you're just like in like 8 different trumpet players and you're like, whoop.
Yeah.
I guess I started playing guitar when I was about 12. At high school, I started getting lessons. We had a guitar teacher come to the school, and I was just atrocious for the first, I want to say 4 years, 3 or 4 years. Right. I was pretty bad, but I had a real keenness for it, and stick-to-itiveness or whatever you call it. But I just was obsessed with overcoming my stumpy fat finger syndrome and my, all the other kids I had lessons with were just like completely eclipsing me with their skills and you know, dexterity and everything. But when I had a new teacher come to the school and start like saying, hey, what songs do you want to learn on the guitar? What do you want to play? And I was bringing in tapes of, I guess, things like, Hunters and Collectors, like early sort of collector stuff and Violent Femmes things, stuff like that. And I was just started learning songs that I actually dug and wanted to, play like, so that was, definitely my first instrument, guitar. And then I picked up the bass when I guess I was about 16. Yeah. And, I started playing with a few friends. I was in a few fraught attempts at being a funky kind of guy. Managed to meet up with my Lucksmiths bandmates in high school, which was which was a good thing. And then, you know, just sort of started writing pop tunes. But I, you know, I was really into like lead guitar still at that point. And yeah, so yeah. Joining a band with someone like Marty Donald, who was strumming a lot of guitar chords, yeah. simple chords, gave me a lot of room to move as a bass player. So I think that's, I sort of was hearing the bass as a second melodic instrument with the vocals. So, and without a full drum kit there to sort of like lock in with, it was just sort of like a bit more of a broad canvas to work on there. So that sort of led me down the path of bass playing. It was definitely meeting up with Marty.
That's my favorite thing about the sound of Lucksmiths. It reminds me a lot of The Cure, where Robert Smith, who was the lead songwriter, was the bass player. And so, yeah, you're right. It's that blend of the bass and the drums, for the most part, are quite light because Tali is singing while playing. My favorite bass riff of yours is 22. It's a really early one. It's that do 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 do. I love that, man. It's so good.
I love it when people sing bass lines to me. Such a wonderful fulfilling. Oh my god. Thanks. Thank you. So, yeah, I mean, coming up with curly bass lines like that was probably just what kept me going. You know, there was a whole bunch of other bands that sort of happened in high school and stuff, but it was all like, you know, Hendrix covers and things like that. But I think it was like getting to sort of just noodle around with, you know, those Lucksmiths things was really what I was into, you know, kind of fill out the gaps a bit.
Yeah. I'm so curious about how you formed Lost and Lonesome, because obviously, so we've just had the 25th anniversary of the label. You were really young when you started it, and the Lucksmiths, from memory, because you guys were still on Candle for ages, right?
Yeah. So, I don't know. The Lucksmiths were we were happily on Candle Records, and you know, Chris Crouch was you know, one of our best friends, and all the bands were awesome. I guess what happened was there was only certain amount of bands that could fit on that record label, and Melbourne was full of, not just Melbourne but Australia and overseas, so many bands that I loved that weren't on a label, Jane McCracken and I started the label just to kind of, because we'd put out, you know, we'd respectively, knew how to contact the place to get CDs made. We knew how to get bromides made to get the covers printed. You know, we knew like the two or three things that were essential to getting things made. You know, CDs primarily. We kind of just fancied ourselves as a record label because of that very reason. We had no business nous whatsoever. Jane, I guess, had a bit more of a sense of cleanliness than I. So she had the office at her house and I just had a lounge room full of boxes. So I was like the storage space and she was like the tidy setup. But we just started releasing friends of ours things and helping them put them out. And I mean, I don't think we ever really were like, we're a record label, you know, we were just figuring it out as we went, and luckily, we just sort of made lots of friends in the process, and just kept going because of that.
You guys have put out some amazing stuff. I'm a massive fan of Fred Astaire, and when I came to the you know, anniversary gig last year, it was amazing to see him live, because I don't know whether he performs that much, really. And Anthony Atkinson, who we've covered his album on this show, we absolutely love Anthony Atkinson. You've done some amazing stuff, man. Like, do you, I'd love to ask you about, because obviously the premise of the show is like perfect albums. Do people just like send you albums? Like, do you find you're listening to a lot of new music? Like, how do you go about deciding, you know, what you release as a record label and stuff?
Yeah. I guess, you know, there is a certain, like, I'm definitely trying to keep things rather contained, especially now I've stopped sort of working with bands overseas, just because it's kind of just, you know, hard. It's just hard. Yeah. Hard and it's expensive, and there's no bands to play shows and promote it. You know, it's just no, I do. There's definitely still, you know, Melbourne still hasn't slowed down as a music city, I guess, and you know, the regionals as well. Not so much like bands from interstate contacting me or anything, but yeah, just mostly, I guess, just the outer realms of the already sort of solidified Lost and Lonesome Inner Sanctum. You know, there'll be those friends, there's little tendrils going off in all directions, just sort of so there'll be, you know, I do receive quite a lot of submissions as a label, and it's just hard. I mean, I can't obviously do everything, and you know, I'm about to turn 50. I've got a family. I've got, you know, and it's just like, you know, it's not a business it's a sinking business, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
It's gone under. I'm just barely keeping it. my own creative output is stymied because of that very thing as well. You know, I'm up at 3 a.m. entering metadata, and it's like, I could be sleeping. I could be writing a song. I could be doing a drawing, but I'm like typing on a computer. Like, you know, it's not what I kind of expected. Yeah. I expected running a record label. I thought I'd be out at a cocktail party or something like that.
Yeah. So you are in so many bands still. Obviously, the Lucksmiths have sadly, you know, split up about, 10 years ago now or so. But
14, 15 now. Oh, yeah.
Wow, man.
Oh, 14 and a half, yeah.
But obviously, you've got Last Leaves, you've got Monona Lone. Can you tell me a little bit about your songwriting process and how you start? And also just the craft of when you start writing songs, do you think about an album or do you just think about the song?
Well, it sort of happens in different ways. Like, I mean, the last Monona Lone album I did was during the lockdowns. And that was kind of a completely different process for me because my friend Jane, who I started Lost and Lonesome with, let me borrow her 8-track and a little cassette 8-track machine. And I never sort of recorded myself at home. I mean, I'd done a little bit here and there on, you know, Reaper or whatever, you know, but nothing, not a fully realized album or anything. So I just sort of started messing around on that. And then I was getting all these ideas down on tape and it started to have a bit of a flow. And then I was like, oh, well, I guess it's an album now. Like, I guess I'm making an album. And like, originally I was just like, I'll record some of these ideas as demos that I can show my bandmates in Monona Lone. And then I was just like, you know what? These guys probably can't play this shit as well as I can, so I'm going to keep my own, listen to that sweet guitar lick. And I just decided, that became the album. But at the moment I've been working on new songs. Well, before I recorded that album, which was Stay Foggy, which came out after the pandemic, I had been recording demos with Gus, the drummer in Monona Lone.
Yeah, right.
And that just got shelved. And now that sort of all those songs are starting to sort of come to some kind of realization. So, I'm working on these songs as an album, and it's kind of, it's a bit harder to working on it that way, because it was like you've got this kind of concrete concept of how it's going to be at the end, whereas like if you're just fiddling around coming up with ideas and no real it's different, again, it's a different process to just sitting down writing a song and then going out on the road and touring, which is, that's how we did all the Lucksmith stuff, you know. We just write songs on tour and then finally we'd be like, oh yeah, let's record that. So this is sort of, I don't get to do much touring these days. So it's more just sort of focused trying to write an album, and there's like two or three songs that just won't write themselves. Yeah, so who knows? Who knows if this album's actually ever going to see the light of day? There'll probably be another two or three in between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember listening not that long ago to an interview with John Darnielle from the Mountain Goats and the lead singer of Cake, talking about how the idea of an album is pretty much dead these days because people just don't really do it. Like, for the most part, artists, and you know, you've got big artists like Taylor Swift and stuff, but a lot of artists these days just put out singles on streaming, and that's kind of how they, or you know, or Bandcamp or something. Do you think that the art of the album is dead, or do you still enjoy just sitting down and listening to an album from start to finish?
I still enjoy that, but yeah, that's just sort of, you know, I guess that's how I learned to listen to music. I'm not saying that, you know, I don't always listen to music that way. You know, I stream stuff and I'll happily listen to a bunch of singles and, you know, let, you know, whichever streaming service do its thing, play its radio or, you know, tap into my algorithm and just go for it, which is fun as well. Like, it's a good way to discover new music. But I can see the benefits of just doing, you know, a bunch of singles whenever. And I like artists that do that as well.
Yeah, same.
And, you know, there's nothing governing that you need to put like 12 songs on a record and go, that's it. You know, it's just like, you know, there's people who've got like 50 singles out and they don't care. They're not going to go, oh, I'm going to make an album out of that. It's just music, and it's, you know, to be listened to however people get into it.
Yeah,
you know?
100%. I've gotten really into the new Spotify. I've just put out that AI DJ that it pops in kind of every four or five tracks and just talks to you and tells you what it's going to play next. And then it just goes off on its own thing. It's like, here's music you were listening to a lot in 2017, and just plays five random tracks. Like, it's,
oh wow, yeah, it's, that pretty sounds fun. Mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
Holy, it's weird, Lord. How to what you were saying, Billy, the album as a concept is such a foreign thing to anyone who's only grown up in the, Mark, I've got two 11-year-olds and a 15-year-old. So other than the fact that I love vinyl and Billy and I do this show, which I kind of force them to understand what an album is, but their generation just, because they don't have, they've never really been exposed to physical media. So the idea of an artist telling them, this is the order that you listen to these songs, I've carefully curated this thing and it takes you on a journey.
Yeah.
It's so foreign to them.
Yeah.
They're like,
absolutely. It's more to choose your own adventure for the kids these days.
Putting a vinyl record on and they're like, so how do you shuffle it? You can't. Strap yourselves in, kids. You start at one and you go through to whatever it finishes. And that's how it goes. It's such a bizarre concept to anyone who's sort of come up in this streaming age where not only do you not have this sort of curated list of songs in an order, but it's all playlists. It's, everything's on shuffle. Everything's AI driven or algorithm driven. And
I love streaming, though. I'm all about, my main playlist I listen to just has like 3,000 songs in it and I just hit shuffle on it. And I get
pretty much everything you've given me on this show. I reckon 50% of the albums you've given me on this show, Billy, are things that you have discovered through the...
Yeah,
through... You like the Lucksmiths, so you might like this 100%. Band.
That's how I got into Math and Physics Club, who I absolutely love, and I was so sad when, obviously, that all happened. But they've now got two new bands. There's Model Shop and Field School, and I was really sad that Field School's new album wasn't on Spotify. But... That's all right. I've bought it.
Despite you.
Yeah. But so, Mark, you've been a part of so many bands and released so many albums. It must be hard, but do you have a favorite album that you've contributed to in some way, whether it's one that you played on or one that you were just really proud of producing or releasing? Like,
I mean, there's a bunch of Lucksmiths records that I think are. You know, really awesome. And it's hard to listen to them without feeling nostalgic for the time that we recorded them, you know, because most of them we tried, you know, we did our best to do something unusual, go out of town, find a, you know, log cabin somewhere and you know, do something cool and have a special time recording it. There's no specific Luxmiss one that I love more than another one, but I don't know. There's actually probably the album that I love a lot that I played on. I wouldn't say it's, you know, a perfect album or anything, but just the way it, I think because it was so immediate, like how it was recorded, it's impossible to find, and it's hopefully I'm going to reissue it on Lost and Lonesome at some point. But it's this band called The Mosquitoes,
yeah,
and there's a guy called Drew. He's an American dude, and he for a few tours has been like the fourth Luxmiss before Louis,
yeah,
joined and became the official fourth Luxmiss. Drew would come along and play guitar with us. And then he came back to Australia. Instead of, you know, us paying him for all this touring, we were like, hey, we'll buy you. We're on our way back to the airport to leave after a tour, and we're like, why don't you come back to Australia? We'll buy you a ticket, and that's your payment. And he was like, okay. So he came back and lived on my lounge room couch for 3 months, and he just was just writing songs every day. And then we got, so this 8-track that I've been using, Jane's 8-track, this is in like 2003 actually. So we just sat down and started recording an album, and he asked me to play drums, which I don't do that often. And so I played drums on this album, and he played everything else. And he's just such an amazing, brilliant musician, and just comes up with these great classic pop songs, sort of bubblegum pop, but he's also, you know, he's kind of all over the shop. He's into like Grateful Dead, he's into like metal, he's into kind of everything. But yeah, he just wrote these beautiful songs, and I'll have to find an old CDR and send it to you, because it's,
that'd be amazing. Yeah,
bubblegum, and Billy just perked up.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm a twee kid at heart. Everything I love is bubblegum pop, and yeah, that's amazing. If you find
it's just these songs are just, they just, every time I hear, I'm like, how did anyone write this?
Yeah,
incredible nugget. And you know, he went on to he'll kill me if he ever hears me talking about this, because he's now got an alter ego, and he's kind of like a punk rock sort of rebel like guy. He's got a band called Personal and the Pizzas, and it's all like, started out as a sort of jokey thing, just songs about pizza, but sort of done in like Ramonesy Stooges sort of style.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, and he's still a brilliant musician. I'd love to sort of dig out his first few tapes and things as well, and get them reissued or something like that.
That'd be amazing. Oh, if you do reissue them, I'll buy them straight away. But if you find an old CDR or something, hit me up. That'd be so sick.
I will. Yeah. I mean, they're, you know, it's pretty lo-fi and everything, but actually Carl Smith from this, from SodaStream.
Yeah.
You know, the band SodaStream. He mixed it, and I just remember going to his, like, he didn't know what he was doing either. It was just like, all of us were like, oh, I've got this tape machine, can you put it into the computer? And so he did his best, and it sounds cool. Just somehow turned out to be this freak thing. It sounds great.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. That's a great story. That's cool. What's your favorite album that you haven't had a part in? Like an album that maybe inspired you, or that just musically you really love?
There's probably a few I'd love to talk about, but I guess the main one is, and any of my friends would be like, oh God, Manone, get a album. But it's this album called Jonathan Sings by Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 1983 album. I fell head over heels for this record. Well, cassette, actually, when I got it. Marty Donald from the Luxmiss, we were at Batman Records one day down in, I think it was Elizabeth Street, I think it was on. And he found a tape, and he was like, oh, this is the guy that like there was a band in Melbourne that used to do a cover of one of his songs, Hey There Little Insect.
Yeah.
And it was like, hey, this is Hurdy Gurdy, do this dude's song. And I was like, cool, I'll take that. Yoink. And then it was like, I don't know, $6 or something like that, brand new at Batman. And went back to my car, a little orange Honda, put in the tape deck, and then like started playing it, and then it got stuck in the tape deck. It wouldn't come out.
This is a trauma that kids these days will never understand, that moment of panic when you hear that.
Oh my god. Like at first it was like, oh geez, like I hadn't, like I was still like, well, I put the tape on and I was like, this, I have no idea when this guy is from. Like, yeah, it sounds like it could have, this album could have been recorded anywhere between like 1962 and, you know, whatever year that was, when I heard it, 93. It sounded timeless, and it just blew my mind. Like this, the songs and Jonathan's, you know, his little introductions to the songs and stuff. It's just like, I was like, this guy's like off the planet. And, I got stuck in my car and I did the thing with the knives, you know, to yoink it out.
Yeah.
And it just wouldn't come out. And so we drove around for a whole summer. And I think I was the only one with my license. I was driving my buddies around all summer and we had to listen to that tape over and over and over. And it just worked its way into my DNA. It's like in me. And I know every line, every single word. I know every little ad-lib bit backwards. You know, I know the drumming on that record is so beautiful and so musical. And the organ playing and Jonathan's guitar playing, like, and the two female backing vocalists, it's just treads the finest line between super cheesy and just super heartfelt and just incredible. Yeah. I think at that point I was like, you know, listening to a lot of punk rock and things like that, and it just took me into a new direction.
I'm the same. I'm a massive Jonathan Richmond fan. I was a kid and I was the same. I was mostly into punk rock. I taught myself playing guitar, playing Blink 182 and stuff like that, because it was so incredibly easy to play and learn. I was, how old was I when Something About Mary came out? I must have been like 11 or something. And that was my introduction to Jonathan Richmond, because he's in that film. Right. He plays a number of songs. Including one of my favorites, True Love Is Not Nice. And I was the same. I was like, man, I love this guy. Because you're right, it's so timeless. Like, it does. It sounds like it could be from the 60s or the 90s. Like, it's...
I know. It's where... And you know, it's... He was like... Obviously, if you go back and listen to any of his records, it's completely out of step with what else is going on at that time. Like, you know, he sort of was like proto-punk or whatever you call him, you know, at the start of the 70s. And then like midway through, he's just like, I'm just going to play my guitar to kids in the hospital, you know, and try and cheer them up. And it was just like people were tripping out on why this sort of punk dude is like starting to do these kids songs and nursery rhymes. But then again, and then he did, you know, in the early 80s, he started kind of going adult contemporary. You know, he was writing songs about his wife and you know, all that sort of stuff. But then he still had his, you know, songs about, you know, the chewing gum rapper and stuff like that. His favorite baseball player, you know. So, just one of a kind, such a unique dude. And, I need to
check this guy out.
Yeah, you'd love
him.
I am aware of Modern Lovers purely as the thing that Jerry Harrison did before Talking Heads. I don't think I've ever heard any, and I didn't even know the name Jonathan Richmond. And obviously I've seen Something About Mary, and I thought that was one of the Farrelly brothers. I didn't even know it was. Rather shamefacedly, I'm going to be checking that out straight after we finish recording.
Oh man, seriously, like he could jump in anywhere. Like I was just thinking back, like the last time he toured Australia was in 1997. And his album Surrender to Jonathan has just come out. And that like, I was just thinking about that. I mean, that's like an amazing breakup record. If you listen to that record, but it's so well written. It's like, you know, you listen to his records now and he still puts out amazing records, but it's just like almost stream of consciousness. He's just singing whatever comes off the dome. That record, he's like, it's so concisely put together. The words, they just like nail you. Like, you know, it's so, such a heartbreaker. It's a beautiful record.
Yeah.
You should check it out, Dave.
I'm
ready to have your heart broken?
Haven't we all? no, but yeah, I mean, Billy as well. But no, you've utterly sold me on this guy. I'm going to be doing a bit of a deep dive tonight, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, just keep your mind open, though, you know, because, like, I mean, those late 70s albums are incredible. Like, before he sort of, there's just little, like, almost two or three, the groupings of the albums that he did. You can sort of hear where he was going at each stage. Oh. And then there's the country album, which is just, like, sublime.
Yeah.
Love a bit of country.
Yeah. In fact, not that long ago, Dave gave me Redheaded Stranger, Willie Nelson album on this show.
Oh, wow.
Which I'd never listened to before. I didn't know Willie Nelson could sing.
he's good when he wants to be.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Have you ever, like, yeah, I mean, Willie, have you ever seen any clips of him when he was super young?
No, but he was a good-looking bird. He was.
I know, definitely. You know, wouldn't kick him out of bed.
it's the pigtails, isn't it?
he was a handsome man. Just say, yeah, an amazing singer.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
Billy, I can see your I can see in the video your RoboVac is doing a little.
Yeah.
Little drive-by.
Yeah. You know what it's like with kids in the house. We have to get that guy come out twice a day now.
This is not the first episode where someone's been distracted by the robot in the background.
Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to join us, man. This has just been amazing. I've been such a fan of you for so long in so many different things. I love Monona Loan. We've done the Last Leaves album on this show, and I can't wait for another album, which when I saw Last Leaves in November, there were some new songs played, so I'm hoping that there's going to be some new stuff coming out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the story is, but I think that, you know, Marty moved from Brunswick to Belgrave in, like, whenever that was, the late noughties. and he hasn't slowed down the songwriting. It's just I think he's just like, you know, the pace of cranking things out sort of slowed down. So, you know, that our first record, I think we basically recorded that within the first year or so, and it took 5 years to come out. So and that came out in 2017, so what is it now, 2024? Oh, jeez, so that's 7 years.
Yeah.
So, all right, we're going to get it out this year. the new album's great. Like, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
All the songs are Ace Marty's songwriting is just getting better.
Oh, he's an amazing songwriter. I mean, so are you, though. Dave and I often argue because his favorite Lucksmith song, I think, is one that you wrote, T-Shirt Weather. You wrote that, didn't you?
Yeah.
I was going to say, before you go, can you settle an ongoing feud as to what the greatest Lucksmith song is? Because much as I love Sunlight in a Jar, as far as I'm concerned, T-Shirt Weather is the greatest pop song of the 2000s.
Whereas mine is Sunlight in a Jar. Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. It's,
Sunlight in a Jar is a great song. It's the second best song on Warmer Corners. after Young and Dumb, so you know it's good.
What's the best? What's the best song of Warmer Corners?
Young and Dumb.
Dave, you're tripping.
You wrote that one as well, didn't you, Mark?
I did.
Yeah,
love it. Absolutely love it.
Thanks, mate. That's very kind.
But thank you so much for joining us. You're an amazing songwriter, an amazing musician, and I absolutely adore Lost and Lonesome as a record label. So it's just been such an honor to chat with you. So we can't thank you enough, man.
You guys are too kind. You guys are too kind. You're going to need to do some serious editing on this. Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to have a chat. Thank you for asking me on the show.
No worries. No. Thanks heaps, man.
Yeah, absolute pleasure.
Yeah, awesome. Take care.
Thanks heaps, man.
See ya.
Bye.